Drop it like it's hot.
Oh boy. This is going to be a great show. Hello, Avalanche fans, and welcome back to the Avs Hockey Podcast. This is your home for almost everything Avalanche, and I'm your host, JV. In this show, my man James, Tape Leg Grayling, and I discuss Jiggy's future with the Avalanche. We break down the love for Patrick Waugh in the organization. We compare Nathan MacKinnon and Seth Jones by the numbers. And James and I also answer some of your questions via Twitter, hashtag AskAHP. Those topics and much more coming at you in episode number 88 of the Avs Hockey Podcast. Stick around. James and I will be right back. Hello, Avalanche fans, and welcome back to the Avs Hockey Podcast. He's James Tepley Grillion. I'm JV, and this is your home for almost everything Avalanche. James, what's up?
How you doing?
Fine.
Oh, man. This is...
We're getting down to crunch time.
We are so getting down to crunch time.
The Avs need to bring everything they've got to the game.
So do we.
Remaining. Yes.
We have to bring everything we have. We have to bring everything.
Everything you've
There's
got.
There's so much stuff
everything.
To bring. I'm going to need a U-Haul to bring
the
everything.
The jerseys, the banners, your hockey gear,
yep.
A this scarf.
Podcast gear.
Jimmy the Squirrel,
he's got to make it.
Bring everything you've got.
Everything we've got to this game. But
that's what we do.
In the moment, we're going to have to bring everything we have to this podcast because we have so much to talk about.
We have a lot to talk about, and for that I'm thankful for. It's a little bit easier to make a podcast when you have things to talk about rather than what Matt Duchene is eating and how many more games the Avalanche need to lose in order to be eliminated from the playoffs.
Gluten-free short stick. Let's go.
That's who.
No, the
you should
know,
have done that a long time ago.
Think about what it was like last year when we were at this point. It was like, okay,
tank for Seth.
Yeah,
that was old.
Seth?
At least there was no MacKinnon hashtag. What would it have been? Tank for Nate. Nate for Tank.
Ooh,
Tank you very much.
Tank.
Ew.
Yeah.
Let me know if you come up with something.
Yeah, make sure that we make a hashtag of something that we could have done to get Nathan MacKinnon. Oh wait,
or don't.
Too late.
Yes.
Yeah. Win the lottery for Nate.
something great.
Who was the other team?
Not great for Nate.
Not great for Nate. Nice. Well done. Who was the other team? Was it the Oilers or was it the Blue? It was the Oilers, right? That we're going to get the other pick. Who got the second pick? I forget right now.
The team that got. Well, who had the second pick?
Who had the second pick? That's what I'm asking.
Well, if Seth Jones would have gone second, that would be easy to remember.
Yeah, but he went fourth, and that was Nashville.
Should we do some research on that?
Oh, yeah. What number of podcasts is this, and I'll look this up.
Good segue. This is episode number 88 of the Avs Hockey Podcast, your home for almost everything Avalanche. It's the Peter Mueller / Joe Sakic Quebec Nordique rookie edition of the
AHP.
I
saw a really nice Joe Sakic Quebec Nordique 88 jersey at the Bruins game the other day.
Like, for real?
Yeah, it was great.
Cool. The numbers then were screen printed on. There was no actually stitched numbers back then. But Joe Sakic in his rookie year for a little bit wore number 88 for the Quebec Nordique. And Peter Mueller, acquired by the Avalanche on March 10th, 2010, came to the Avs with Kevin Porter from the Phoenix Coyotes in the Wojtek Volski deal. One of your favorite players of all time, yes, Wojtek Volski.
Oh, I love the guy.
Yeah, he was all right.
Yeah, he wasn't bad. You know, he had his strengths. He had his shootout. He had his strengths for a long time. And, you know, I mean, we're gonna talk a little bit about, like, the we gotta ask some questions on Twitter. We're gonna talk a little bit about the 2010 team and how that, you know, that
what's the difference?
Yeah, considering they, you know, were they a fluke, that kind of thing. But I kind of want to talk a little bit about that history of, like, you know, you've got these players that fans were pretty big on and then went nowhere. And was that a product of the player? Was that a product of the system? And, you know, look at the players that we have now, not that far off from the players that were here last year, especially on the offense and the different systems, you know, that they're coming up in, not just like a system, like you're playing a system, but the working environment, the team environment. So we'll talk a little bit about that.
One of the fascinating things, Peter Mueller's one of them and Wojtek Volski is another, is that Volski then made his way around the NHL to a couple other teams, but really you never heard about him again.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Mueller is another one. Once he was, I don't know, did he, I don't know, he didn't even retire from the Avalanche. I don't know. I think he was just not signed.
He went to, right.
I think his contract ran out, and then no other NHL team signed him. Well, no,
he went to Florida, right?
Played in Florida just for a little. I can't remember.
Speaking of Florida, they were the second pick.
Okay.
Let's see, it was Alexander Barkov.
All right. Who was third then?
Third was Jonathan Drouin. Drouin. Yeah, hasn't played in the NHL.
And then Jones.
Okay. Barkov, 54 games, 8 goals, 16 assists.
Go, Nate. Yeah. Nathan McKinnon, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, as a center.
Absolutely. All right, Peter Mueller, 47 games played for the Avalanche, 16 goals, 20 assists.
47, that's it? It seemed like a lot more.
It did seem like a lot more. He was hurt a lot. He was best known for his concussions with the Avalanche, and he's still playing professionally in Switzerland. So good for Peter Mueller. And do we miss him?
No, I think that he was one of those guys who had potential. And
one of many.
Well, yeah, and they got him from the Phoenix, sorry. The problem, there's a certain point when you just have to realize your potential, and that pretty much comes at the end of your entry-level contract. If you are not, in 3 years, living up to your potential, then something needs to change. And whether that's your play, where you're located, or the fact that you're in the NHL, potential is great for teenagers. Yeah. Potential is great for people working on a geometry problem. But this is not... This is getting paid millions of dollars to play a game.
Whether you're a rookie at a entry level, like you said, or a veteran as well, there comes a time where you either fit in with what the team's doing or not. See Milan Hayduk on that one as well.
Yeah, and that's what the minor leagues are there for. They're there for players to work out their potential.
The show's not for that.
No,
there's other guys that can take care of that.
Neither is this show. We have to bring everything to this show.
We're bringing everything. We're bringing the DVR. We're bringing remote controls.
We're bringing Jimmy the Squirrel.
We're bringing flowers. We're bringing Kleenex.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We got everything for you and a fan. I'm just looking around the room like Brick from Anchorman. Just
you're looking around.
I love Lamp.
Actually, I was thinking about the jerk with Steve Martin. And I don't need anything except for this painting.
I'm taking this with me. Good stuff.
Man, we have so many games to cover.
As many as last show, but yeah.
No, but we've got to go to the beginning of March to get back on track.
Are we ready to do this?
Let's do this.
March 2nd, 2014, the Avalanche beat the Lightning 6-3 at Pepsi Center. It's Military Appreciation Night. I'm going to do most of my shout-outs throughout the podcast this time. We usually save them for the end. I have a couple for that as well. But shout-out to Randy Kroger from the Air Force, and Steve Price, Scuba Steve from the Army, for their service to our country. We appreciate it, fellas. Camo warm-up jerseys as well. Did you bid on any? How many did you win?
No, they go
nuts, man.
I'm sure. It's
they're good-looking jerseys. Shout out to Denver Athletic. They do all the jerseys for the Avalanche, including many in my collection between the gamers and the other things. But they were nuts. I didn't see the final prices, but
I could imagine they were huge.
Yeah, that's what she said. Because I can. The Avalanche are up 2-1 going into the second period. Tyson Berry and Ryan O'Reilly in the first period. Avs are down 3-2 going into the third. Nick Holden, your buddy. Yeah. You try to calm down when I mention his name.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have a few things to say about Nick.
Yeah, you are. I was watched one shift last game and knew this was coming. Nick Holden on the power play in the third period. Eric Johnson at 16:15 in the third period. Welcome back from his suspension. And then Holden again, and Stastny with an empty netter. And Avs defense scores 4 goals this game.
Wait, did Holden get an empty netter? Is that what we're saying here?
He might have.
I'm going to look this up, because if he got an empty netter, we can
lock that. I don't think he did. Maybe I listed that goal twice.
Yeah, we'll see. We're going to
block. Check it out for me? Eric Johnson scored, Nick Holden scored, and Tyson Berry. Yeah, I think it was Nick Holden with the empty netter then. The Avalanche defense scores 4 goals this game. Just for reference, they scored 5 goals in 48 games last season. Matt Duchene and Nathan McKinnon, 2 assists apiece.
Wait, say that again. They scored 5 goals.
They scored 4 goals this game. Uh-huh. They scored 5 goals all of last shortened season. 48 games.
Okay. What? I'm so confused. Oh, for the okay, I'm sorry. So confused for a moment there.
All right, we've started the show. You're aware of that, yes?
Yeah.
We're good? All right, we're good.
Oh, my God.
Congratulations to Semyon Varlamov, who became the 5th goaltender in Avalanche history to win to win 30 games in one season.
Nick Holden's goal was an empty net goal.
Yes, and he had a power play goal in the third period as well,
yes,
I believe.
That was his 5th.
Way to go, Nick Holden. We love you sometimes.
Anyways.
Patrick Waugh, David Abisher, Peter Budaj, and Craig Anderson were the other Avalanche goaltenders to win 30 games in one season.
You've got to imagine that he's going to pass in wins in total. Craig Anderson, Peter Budaj, and David Abisher, yes, just because of how long he signed, unless the Avs wind up trading him away.
Don't see that happening. But you never know.
Well, you never know in this thing. Never know.
Did you see me win Avs header? I know we don't ever play to win Avs header, but I won Avs header. Winning.
You did win Avs
header. Hashtag winning. Absolutely.
Avs salute.
It has to be really, really bad. I think somebody said that's a terrible pun. It's like, when are the Avs headers not terrible?
Yeah, exactly. But I don't play to win. I just play to make funny commentary about the
game. And you do great with that.
Yeah.
You do a fabulous job with that. Shout out to the Avalanche for the Avs header stuff they do after wins. Shout out also to Avs Hockey Podcast follower Cameron Iyer. He had his question. I think this is the second time he's had it. He had his question featured in the postgame with Rycroft and Keefe.
Yeah.
He was talking about Patrick Waugh for Jack Adams.
Hey, Cameron, thanks for sending those into the Avalanche. You can send a couple to our way, too. Ask AHP, maybe.
Hashtag Ask AHP.
Why not?
Shout out to Ryan from Albuquerque for the hashtag on that.
But Cameron, we'll happily answer those questions because we know things, and you can wait for your answer for a month or something. I don't know.
Well, yeah, because that's what you want. you want to ask a question, you want to wait a month for the answer.
Why would you want Rycroft to answer when you have Jay and I?
Anyways. Maybe not a shout out to Cameron. No, we're just kidding. Cameron. Right on, Cameron. Good work. Well done. March 4th, 2014, the Avalanche at the Blackhawks in Chicago, and they win again because that's what the Avalanche do against the Blackhawks. Max Talbot in the second, Ryan O'Reilly, Tyson Berry with a power play goal, the game-winning goal, and Paul Stastny, an empty net goal in the third period. Eric Johnson with the playmaker, 3 assists, Varley, 36 saves, and this win makes we're basically watching the best Avalanche team in history. Which is, I can't wrap my mind around that, especially where they are in the standings.
Mm-hmm.
But they reached 40 wins faster than any team in the franchise history in the 62nd games. The 2000-2001 Stanley Cup team got it in 63 games. Shout out to Avs PR for that on Twitter. That doesn't even make sense to me. You have two Stanley Cup teams that didn't play as well as this team did through 62 games.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
You know, the Red Wings fans will probably tell you it's because the Red Wings are in the East.
Most likely. Yeah, good point.
I, on the other hand.
I don't think like a Red Wings fan.
No. It's pretty exciting. If there's one thing that that this season has done, it's instill faith back in the team. But at the same time, you kind of look over your shoulder. You're waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah, and I guess they've had a couple opportunities so far this year to have that happen and hasn't quite gotten there. The way they're playing right now is kind of a...
Which we'll talk about in a minute.
We will. Absolutely, we'll talk about that. I'm not nervous, but
they have
to slow down sometime.
You know, take what you... Well, I mean, look at the Bruins right now. I mean, they have won, as of right now, 12 games in a row. Look at the Blackhawks when they were on their incredible run of unbeaten, which, you know, of course, that includes shootouts. Or shootout. I think that would include losses.
Yeah.
Shootout losses or overtime losses.
Yep.
But, you know, they had to cool at some point, but win. They kind of still haven't. It's been amazing.
Yeah. That's what good teams do.
Yeah. And
well, great teams.
Yeah. You know, I think that the Avs are cooling a little bit, but it's been.
There was only one direction to go. You kind of get to that point, too, where they haven't had a 3-game losing streak yet this season. They lost in overtime between the two losses that we're going to talk about later in the show. But overall, not bad at all.
True.
All right. March 5th, 2014, when this was the trade deadline, I was pretty convinced the Avs weren't going to make a move until the very last minute. The Avalanche traded a second round pick in the 2014 draft. That was, that'll be this year, to Calgary in exchange for goaltender Ray Tobera. 6'4", 194. He was 9-17-2 with the Flames this season, 2.95 goals against. He was originally part of the Jay Bouwmeester deal that brought Bouwmeester to St. Louis. Played in his first game the other night, and the world ended. I guess something happened. Everybody,
we are definitely going to talk about that.
A lot of people that I saw flipped out about him not being as good as they thought he was going to be. I didn't know.
I don't think that this has anything. You know, I'm not too worried about that. I'm not too worried about what it means Avalanche wise. What I was thinking was, what does this mean in the minor league system? What does this say about
what message does this send?
Well, and what? Yeah, there's Calvin Pickard, right? He's probably not ready. There's
Sammy.
Sammy.
Ada Callio.
Thank you. Jeez.
You're welcome. I don't want you to hurt yourself. Ada Callio.
Ada Callio. Gee, I can never, ever, ever pronounce. I do hurt
That's
myself.
That's why we're here.
He has not been.
It's really
wonderful.
Interesting. Yeah, it's interesting that they wouldn't think about bringing up the youngster. I thought about that too, along with Jiggy.
I don't think that he really proved himself too well. I think that that his chances kind of he was given some chances. I'm sure he'll be given chances again. You know, but he hasn't made the most of them, yeah. And you don't have a lot of opportunities. So, I think this says more about the depth of the system, especially considering. Since their inception, they have been the Avalanche's farm team. The Lake Erie Monsters have made the postseason once since their inception, and they did not make it out of the first round.
It's true.
And that's not good.
Well, they have the Hershey Bears, too.
I'm just talking about Lake Erie.
Absolutely.
And Hershey Bears also were often shared
with
other teams. For instance, they were shared
with the Capitals.
Capitals. Yeah. So, As a purely Avalanche farm team, that doesn't say a lot about your depth.
Sure, great point. And we also have Jiggy implications as well. Whether I'm curious as to whether Jiggy shared with the organization that I'm thinking this is about it, maybe you should go grab someone while you can, or they made that decision for him. Because did Dater's article that we'll share a little bit later, did that go into that at all or not?
A little bit, but I think it's more that you know, the Avalanche had to make a decision for themselves.
Right.
Whether, you know, nobody's going to make a decision for a player. The player has to make a decision whether they retire or not. Right. He can try free agency again. You know, he is, if he were a one franchise guy, then okay. No, he's not. And he's never, you know, Jaguar is the only active Hartford Whaler left.
Right.
Other than, you know, you could say Chris Pronger, but he's not really active, but he's still, he hasn't quote unquote retired because of his injury status.
Right.
But,
really, did you get the point? Because I didn't read the article.
Did
the Avalanche like communicate with Jiggy and say, "Here's what we're going to do"? Did you kind of get that feel, or like was this a shock?
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But well, let's might as well talk about it now. There was a article posted today, this Sunday, March 23rd, about Jiguer and his potential for retiring. This is in the Denver Post by Adrian Dater. And let's see. Let me get to the quote here. He was stung a bit when he heard about Bear's acquisition. But here's what he sat down with Patrick Waugh and talked with him directly. And he said, it was an honest conversation, and sometimes honest ones aren't always the easiest, said Jaguar, who has 261 victories in his career, with a Stanley Cup in 2007 with Anaheim and a Conn Smythe trophy in 2003. With the then Mighty Ducks, despite losing to New Jersey Devils. I was there at that game 7 and saw him.
It's pretty cool.
So I'm lose the game, but win the
I saw the guy actually walked up to him and kind of whispered in his ear, and I think he just told him not to go too
Don't
far.
Leave yet.
Yeah.
But it was a good conversation. This is Jaguar again. But it was a good conversation in the sense that there was no secret as to where I stood, no gray area. If anything, I appreciate the talk we had, because a lot of coaches sometimes tend to steer away from honesty because it's not always an easy way to go. Patrick will tell you how it is, and sometimes as a player, that's all you want. You want to know how it really is. And, you know, if Jaguar didn't know where it was, I would be really surprised. He's a proud guy.
Absolutely.
You know, when he won the Conn Smythe, if you can go back, I don't know if there's got to be video of it. Maybe we'll see if we can find something for YouTube or on YouTube to post on this. But the video of him getting the Conn Smythe trophy, you know, obviously he just lost the Stanley Cup in Game 7. He had absolutely carried that Ducks team. And this was in the clutch and grab, positional goaltender, type of NHL.
This was against Brodeur, who had, I think he set the record for most shutouts in a playoff run that year.
But also, Jaguar had a 5-overtime game. 5 overtimes. I remember staying up for this game. It was a phenomenal game. And Jaguar, it made me really, really appreciate Jaguar as a goaltender. But he's a very proud guy. But when he accepts that award, when he accepts the Conn Smythe, you're the most valuable player. And you're just that hurt that you didn't win the one that everybody wants. And you really see it. He wore his emotions on his sleeve.
He still does.
He very much does. He's a very proud guy. The problem with Shiger, and this is not, you know, I mean, he's getting older. That's obvious, you know, everybody does. But the other thing is, he's a very good positional goaltender, but positional goaltending, you could win on positioning alone in the NHL before the 2004-2005 lockout, when clutch and grab was okay, when, you know, Mario Lemieux would skate in with two guys hanging off of his back and there was no penalty called. Look at the traffic in front of the net these days, especially with the Avalanche. You see this all the time in some of these games. The pass right in front of the crease, and you have to get side to side. You have to be good positionally, but you have to be very, very mobile these days.
Athletic is what I like to call it, for sure.
Yeah, Tim Thomas. There's a reason that Tim Thomas did so well when he was, you know, he was definitely not the youngest goaltender out there when he won, when he won the Stanley Cup, but. Very good goaltender, and a lot of it had to do with his athleticism, getting side to side. Varley, same deal.
Varley's great with that.
He's good positionally. He's not as good positionally as Shiger is, but his mobility, his ability to get side to side from post to post, the way that he can make a second save, those are the things that really are making his game so good. And that makes Shiger's not as good.
Yeah. Yeah, a decent defense always helps them too. Yeah, it's definitely a team game, but if you're athletic, you can give yourself a shot when normally you wouldn't, and that's starting to leave Jakey.
Yeah.
I don't think you could argue with that either.
Here's one more quote from that article. This is Shiger. I've been very lucky and had a career better than I thought I would, Shiger said. Even when I was a young adult, I never really felt like I was good enough to play in this league. But I was always well coached with Francois Allaire. I owe him so much, and I played with some amazing players. It's been so far up to this day a great ride. Which, you know, that's wonderful.
I don't know.
No, Francois Allaire, again. Wonderful goaltending coach. I just read an article about a Finnish goaltending coach and why players like Kiprasov and the like, why Finland has been such a place for goaltenders recently.
Yeah.
And Montreal, you know, used to be the place. Quebec used to be the place where all these great goaltenders came from. And now it's shifting to Finland, and why. And I'll try and find that and put that for the article for the post. But it's a great read. But amazing what a good goaltending coach can do, because there are so many coaches out there. They think in their systems. They think in drills. And they don't understand what it takes for a good goaltender. And when you have more, you know, this is an area where, especially when the lockout first ended in 2005 and there was a salary cap, this was an area where a team could spend some money and improve their team without having to spend more salary per se or towards the cap. It's amazing that teams don't carry them, goaltending coaches. Yeah. And maybe part of it is that there just aren't that many out there.
At least good ones. The Avs were criticized for many years through the last few for not.
Clint Malarchuk is in the Flames organization as one.
I've seen Varley and Jiggy work with Allaire, and you can tell there's a lot of respect between the three. They have fun. Allaire laughs and everything with them, but you can tell the dynamic between them. It's made a difference.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm a former catcher in baseball, and catcher can be the same way. It's mostly, here, I have some drills. Catchers, why don't you go over there and work on some drills? And then everybody else kind of do their thing. Whereas when I was coaching, especially with the high school kids, I was responsible for the catchers. I think it makes a big difference, and especially with an important position like a catcher in baseball and a goaltender in hockey. I've lived through that dynamic, and it can have a positive impact on the team.
I could imagine a catcher is one of those places where you don't get the coaching, you don't get the strategy, you don't get those, because it doesn't seem like it's as much of a play. Everything in baseball seems like it's from the bat out.
Well, there's a lot of specialized moves. There's a lot of situations that won't happen very often to a catcher. Mm-hmm. If you play in the field, there's only so many things that can happen. For a catcher, you have a few more to worry about. If you've never been a catcher or a goaltender in the NHL or a coach forever, it's impossible to know that. You can guess. You can guess as a coach and hope it goes right. But why not have it to where it's for sure and have a better impact on things? So
I think it's probably Jiguer's. I think it's Jiguer's swan song.
It sounds like it.
It sounds like it. I can't imagine you know, he also talks in the article that he's a co-owner of a team up in Canada.
Oh, okay.
And so they'll probably, he's talking about how his family will probably move up there and be with them, be around that team.
Sure.
And so he's kind of already got a plan.
Yeah.
But you know,
good for him.
Yeah, very good for him. He had a rough ride in Toronto when he was there. He, you know, he had the great run in 2003. He had to bow out of the beginning of the playoffs in 2007 because of issues with his son. I believe it was son's eye. They had to have, you know, his newborn son had to have surgery with, and you know, he's a guy who he's one of those guys who. There's almost nothing you can fault about his career, and yet he's not spoken of as highly as I think he really deserves.
Yeah.
And that's too bad.
He might be one of those guys that after he retires, people will respect a little bit more. You never know.
Yeah.
It's tough to watch a guy kind of struggle, especially a guy that's as classy and has been around for as long.
I was so excited when he came to the Avalanche. Yeah. It was just because, you know, and even knowing that his best days were behind him, you know, that's – I was still so excited.
He's still been great for the team and for the franchise for sure. No
Anyways,
doubt about that.
You know, he's not done yet, but
no, he's not, but it kind of looks that way.
Yeah.
He's,
Not dead yet.
That's right. Paul Stastny's still an Avalanche. So I don't, whatever. We got that every single year. Hopefully they sign him. I like your idea in the last show. A little less money, a few more years.
There is no way that they're going to sign Paul Stastny for more money than Gabriel Landeskog. Or
Matt Duchene. Or Ryan O'Reilly.
Yeah. Or
Nathan
MacKinnon in a couple of years. Because that dude's
he's gonna get a lot of money.
He'll get a bridge contract, I believe. But at some they're not gonna spend a ton of money for Stastny in the next period. They won't be able to afford MacKinnon if they do. You know, they still have a couple more years on PA Parento. So yeah,
and Tange.
Yeah,
although he's not going to. Yeah, he's.
So if you have to, re-sign Ryan O'Reilly, which I believe that they will, if you have to, you know, and you have to re-sign Stastny, which I believe they will, he's going to take a discount, and he kind of already said he would. So
we'll go with it.
Yeah,
we like it. All right, what else we got here? Here, let's keep going.
Let's keep going. Let's move on to the next game. We really spent a lot of time on that, but on Jaguar, but you know,
he deserves it.
Yeah.
March 6, 2014, the Avalanche play at the Red Wings and win in overtime. Woo-hoo! 3-2. That's right. Matt Duchene ties the game at 1 in the second period. P.A. Parento ties the game at 2 in the third period.
Pa Parent.
Nathan MacKinnon passes Wayne Gretzky for the longest point streak for an 18-year-old in the third period. No, in overtime with a really nice pass to Andre Benoit for the winner. We will post video of that in the actual post for the podcast. It was really, really cool. I liked it a lot. EJ and Ryan O'Reilly, 2 assists. Matt Duchene, a goal and assist. Jean-Sebastien Jaguar with 35 saves. And lock up Nathan MacKinnon for the Calder. Yes?
I say so. Let's.
Who else would it be?
You know, the other guy, of course, there are other guys out there.
Holy crap, Seth Jones is a minus 23?
Yeah, Seth Jones right now, because these two guys are going to be tied together, kind of like Taylor Hall and Tyler Seguin are going to be always tied together because they were, you know, went 1-2, who was going to be the first guy. Seth Jones will always be tied together with Nathan MacKinnon.
Who's Duchene's buddy? Isn't it Hall? Whoever. Keep going.
The thing with those guys was it was with Taylor Hall and Tyler Seguin was
John Tavares.
Whereas they actually could be swapped. Nobody really knew who was going to go first.
Exactly.
As of this moment, 71 games in, it's 23 goals, 31 assists for 54 points and a plus 18. Now I don't take a lot of stock in plus minus,
but
when
it's compared to a minus 23.
Yeah. It's Seth Jones, 71 games, 6 goals, 18 assists for 24 points as a defenseman. Minus 23.
Wow.
Now that's minus 23 playing on the other side of Shea Weber. Okay.
Wow.
Minus 23. Now you're a defenseman. You're going to be hung out to dry more often. These things, you know, these things are going to happen. You have to play at times when your fourth line is out there. You have to play at times when you've got 15 Patrick Bortolos on the bench and you're doing the best that you can here, people. But minus 23.
Yow. Yeah. I didn't realize. Thanks for looking that up. I didn't realize things were like that.
Seth Jones, folks, almost and people were angry. People were angry that he didn't get picked. And hey, whatever, that's fine. But how does it look now? And this is like the same deal with trades. This is the same deal with Varlamov. Oh yeah, the Nashville Predators just recalled Philip Forsberg. Philip Forsberg, who was picked with that first round pick that the Avalanche gave up for Varlamov. How's that trade look now? Looks pretty good.
Way to go, Avs.
Anyways,
we're happy with that. March 8, 2014, the Avalanche lose to the St. Louis Blues 2-1. P.A. Parenteau scores the lone Avs goal in the third period to make it 2-1. Avs beginning to prove where they are in the standings is definitely not a fluke.
This was one of the best games I've ever seen that they lost. Game. The Avalanche played so hard, so well against a team that is so good right now. And remember, we talked about Ryan Miller, and we were talking. Scott Thurston gave us that question: what's it going to be? You know, what are we going to be looking at coming to the playoffs? This is it. And what the question was, what is Ryan Miller going to be like? You know, this was definitely a proving game, and this was a playoff intensity game.
He makes me nervous, Ryan Miller. That whole team, they're big and they're good. Well, that's why they have 100 whatever points they have right now.
If the Buffalo Sabres can actually be honest with themselves and realize, look at Ryan Miller going to a team that's halfway decent and go, oh, this, it really points out how many problems that the Sabres have had.
Yeah,
and
they're probably not feeling too good.
No, and that's, you know, it was time for Ryan Miller to move on, but he had to go someplace where there was a contender and where he had a team to play with. The Blues are that team. They are phenomenal.
They are tough. Matt Duchene, fantastic in this game. Gabriel Landeskog hit a crossbar solid early in the game. Jan Hayda hit the inside of the post on, I believe it was a power play. It was one of those where it ended up behind Ryan Miller, obviously. Hit the post to his right. And then shot straight behind him to the other side of the ice on his left. I mean, it was the inside part of the post.
You hit those posts. You hit the inside of that post.
The outside's one thing. The inside where you get the angle.
I hit an inside of a post on a shootout goal in a rec hockey game recently.
Dang it.
And as soon as I hit it, I was like, oh, no, that didn't go. But, you know, if it was a quarter inch the other way, it would have gone out. It went in. It was like, oh, my goodness, how close can those things get? It is a game. They say it's a game of inches. I'm going to be Mark Rycroft for a moment here. Folks, they say it's a game of inches. That's why. Right there, folks. You know it. Stay with it.
Okay.
Just a game of inches.
It is. Folks. And the Avalanche were literally inches away from either tying the game or a win. Nathan MacKinnon's record-setting point streak for an 18-year-old ends at 13 games. Well done, 29. Move over 99. And what's left to do is start another streak.
Yep.
March 9th, the Avalanche, let's see, Terry Fry describes Nathan MacKinnon's journey to Denver. We will post some quotes to that. Shout out to Terry Fry as well. I'm not going to go into the conversation that we had, but he was talking about how Twitter becomes a place where line combinations are kept rather than a way to communicate and write and actually have things worth depth. So shout out to Terry Fry. We talked about that a little bit. Yeah. I know you talked to him a little bit about it as well.
And I agree with him. This was always why I first started on Twitter, and there's a little bit of me that still laments that I started Twitter the way I did, because it took away from writing on my blog and doing longer stuff and the like.
Me too.
But Terry Fry is one of those guys. I think you really need those guys who can write longer form and get a little more in depth. And Terry Fry is one of them. If you don't, he doesn't write enough hockey, in my opinion, but that's just the gig anymore.
Yeah.
And, but go back in the archives of the Denver Post. If you really want to read some stuff that's really worth reading, check him out. One of my favorites is with the Ottawa Sun, I believe, Roy McGregor. Mm-hmm. He's phenomenal. He's one of those guys who can write really well long form stuff and gets away from just this is what happened in the game. He'll get a little more depth and more background. Roy McGregor, read his stuff.
When Dater tries, he can. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't try that often.
I think it used to be that Dater was like the pure beat writer. And then you had Terry Fry, who was the columnist. And the business has changed so much now that your beat writer is your columnist, and there's so many deadlines. I think that there's I think that it's kind of like – he's kind of like Steve Ott in
– Keep going.
Here we go. Hang on, folks. Here we go.
I'll get back to it just here. Just hang with me here.
He's almost like Steve Ott, because Steve Ott, you watch Steve Ott, and he's just a punk, and he's a jerk, and he mixes
Steve
things
Downey.
Up. But as soon as he starts playing hockey, you realize, oh, my God, this guy can play. And Adrian Dater's the same way. Adrian Dater does the quick fire stuff. He'll get in people's faces. He gets, you know, he gets rude sometimes. He's confrontational. And then he sits back, does something a little more long form, and you're like, oh, wow.
The piece that he wrote on Patrick Waugh, which we'll reference here in a little while.
Yeah.
It was fabulous.
Wasn't there a piece that he did about doping or something like that with Chambers? They did like a series like last year. I think
so. Yeah.
And it was widely praised.
Yeah.
But then, you know, okay, now the deadlines are back and now I've got to be doing this and I've got to be doing that. And it gets back to that short form in the moment stuff. That's my comparison to Steve Ott and Adrian Dater.
All right. I think you did pretty well there.
Thank you.
Well played, sir.
Yeah, I love when it's like
there. It's like, oh, here he goes.
I know, just like last one with Chris Stewart and the poor man Zooey Deschanel.
Yeah. Right. You know, I trust you.
I'm just saying. I don't even these connections just kind of happen right in the moment. I didn't have that written out. I have no idea.
His eyes get kind of big, and he's just like, okay,
ooh, I have an idea.
Come on, hurry, call on me. All right, March 10th, Avalanche versus the Jets. The Avalanche win 3-2 in overtime. We'll get back to Imagine Avs here in a second.
Keep going.
I just wanted to hear that. P.A. Parenteau leaves the game in the first period, fairly early in the first period, with a right MCL injury. Announced after the game that he'll be out 4 to 6 weeks, or basically at least the rest of the regular season. Paul Stastny was also out because of his back, so the Avalanche had to roll 3 lines plus 1. It was like a rec league game almost. Mm. Time on the ice, Ryan O'Reilly over 25 minutes, Matt Duchene 24 and a half minutes. The Avs draft 7 defensemen for this game, so they started with 11 forwards anyway. I mean, it was crazy. The ice time leader for the defensemen was Eric Johnson with 22:56, and box scores never read like this in the NHL. So Avalanche got kind of stuck there, but they stuck to it, and they did all right. John Mitchell in the first period, Dustin Byfuglien scored 2 goals in the second period. Andre Benoit really changed the game late in the second period, tying things up with like 9 seconds left. Matt Duchene scored with Dustin Byfuglien hanging on him during the overtime. Duchene came out of the corner, and that's just basically karma. This is how pro sports work. So my little caption for that was Big Buff. This is karma. Karma, meet Big Buff.
The whole thing with that last goal with Duchene, and we'll have that. We'll post the video if you.
It's already there.
Okay.
Yep.
On the post for this, we'll have the video of that goal, but. That again, that pivot, that turn, that fast turn and go that Matt Duchene has, and those are the moves that keep you that hang defensemen out to dry like this. And he hasn't been using them as much lately. And when he does, he just creates space. And in the NHL, you have to be able to create space quickly and do something fast with the puck. Those two things will get you a lot of goals.
It'll beat a lot of players, especially a tired Dustin Byfuglien. Mm-hmm. A lot of people can beat a tired Dustin Byfuglien. He was tired. John Mitchell in this game, a goal and assist. Would you like to chat about Imagine Avs?
Not really. No.
Just a little bit.
Okay, so the so
he will make Avalanche sense of the noise he just made right now, folks. Here,
I have,
stick with him here. Here
I did a post, and we should link to my post about
it. It's already there.
Oh, okay. Good. About the this video that the Avalanche came up with
the
Imagine Dragons, yes. Right? And the song is called Radioactive. And I don't like it. I'm just going
to
say
the highlights.
Right there,
I tried to focus on the positive. I like the highlights. That's
the whole
about
thing.
It.
Yeah. That's the thing, though. That's okay. So it's this kind of moody doom and gloom.
There's a bass drum.
There's a big bass drum that some guy, I'm guessing he's an imaginary dragon, whacks
there's
a lot.
Like, yeah, and there's like powdered sugar on it, so it poofs when he does. Yeah, it's
and there's okay. And
a lot
there's
of sweat.
And there's what's his butt? Gabriel Landeskog looking in a mirror without his shirt on, being very upset about something, and
his nose. He's having nasal issues,
and Matt Duchene's kind of angry, and he's out of focus, and then suddenly in focus.
Paul Stastny,
who lip syncs "Whoa-oh" a couple of times, not very convincingly.
How about
either
Nate McKinnon on the bridge? No.
So here's the thing. It's a marketing thing, and good for them. Good for the Avalanche for doing this. They are trying so much harder than they have in years. It used to be like a wild turkey sighting. It was like you saw it was like evidence that Bigfoot existed. When we would see a billboard in the town, and all of a sudden everybody would be going, "Oh my God, did you see it on 6th and Calumet? There was a billboard about the Avalanche."
It's almost like finding an imaginary dragon.
Almost like imaginary dragon was somewhere. And I'm an imaginary dragon. Hello.
Look at me.
Look at me. I'm an imaginary dragon. They can imagine me. Ask me questions. I'm around. But I didn't like it. I thought it doesn't sync up with what the Avs are doing right now. Right now, the Avalanche are exciting. They're fun. They're playing the game and smiling. And here's this moody, I'm very sensitive. And here's my grayscale apartment and my very dour looking friend with his gigantic bass drum that he just likes to randomly beat. And I'm mad about something, but I can't tell what.
And I might be in focus and I might not be.
But so we look at what do we look at? We look at the hockey highlights,
Yeah.
And that's great. That proves right there that this video was not for us. It's not for people who are already fans.
Right.
If you're looking for the hockey highlights, you already like hockey. This is for people to bring in more people, and that's wonderful. Good. Keep doing stuff. But I didn't like it. Yeah. Shout out to my friend Carmen Hansen who did like it, and it was mostly, I think, because of the shirtless players.
Yeah.
And the other thing was so we've got big guy with the bass drum, right?
Shirtless players.
Sure.
I thought that was Jamie McGinn for a second.
I did too. I thought it was either him or Mitchell. And I was like, who is this guy? And it turns out.
I think it's the lead singer. Yeah.
I think it's the lead singer who apparently is also a drummer, but only plays one drum.
A percussion. Yeah.
And the thing is you're going from Avalanche players who are lip syncing. And by the way, we know that these guys are not in the band. So why are they lip syncing? To a different dude lip syncing without his shirt on. You can't tell that he's not a player unless you really recognize who these guys are and can pick them out really fast, right?
Did Paul Stastny actually sing the song?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Paul Stastny's on the album. Yeah, he's an imaginary dragon, too. So anyways, that's my whole rant on the thing. I think it's wonderful that they're doing something. They shouldn't be praised for doing something because they should have been doing stuff before, but that they actually are doing something is great. I just didn't like what they did.
We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
We'll give them credit, but I don't know how it could have been better. I don't know whether.
I think to make it better, you find a better story to tell because all marketing is storytelling. Right. If the story of the Avalanche is not, I'm sad, I'm gloomy, things aren't going my way.
Grayscale apartment.
It isn't the locker room right now is not a grayscale apartment. That was last season. That was the season before. Now, this is Technicolor. This is exciting. This is smiles and jokes and laughing and scoring the puck and having a good time. This is not my bridge of sadness.
Look at me.
I could win a Calder, but I have a bridge of sadness.
I will look at you mournfully.
You're in third place. Get over your bridge of sadness.
Let's win some games. Get out there. Start smiling.
So there you go.
Yeah. I hear you. All right, March 11th, Adam Proto of the Hockey News posted a great article about Patrick Waugh for Jack Adams. A couple quotes just real quick. Although stars such as Matt Duchene, Gabriel Landeskog, and Ryan O'Reilly have been instrumental in that success, I'm here today to pay respect to the man I believe is the key force behind Colorado's stunning turnaround from the worst team in its conference in 2013-14 to one of the league's most dangerous. The Avalanche are to some degree still learning who they are, but under Waugh, they're no longer questioning who they are. A slick, smart squad that can run up the score on an opponent as easily as they can play and win at a low-scoring game. Waugh's done in 6 months what his predecessor Joe Sacco couldn't do in 4 years. Any way you slice it, that's impressive. Mm-hmm. It's true. I mean, it's just really well-spoken from someone who doesn't follow the Avs like we do.
Yeah.
That has actually seen this pan out.
Mm-hmm.
It's better than I thought it'd be.
The only caveat that I have about this, okay, is that it isn't exclusively the coaching. True. They got rid of guys who, and I hate to toss this around. I don't know what the locker room was like, but we have emerging pictures of what it was like from what players say now, what they said at the end of the season last season, the Las Vegas quotes, what Joe Sacco and his regime seemed to be like, and what it presented. My opinion, why is part of it, but also getting rid of the cancers that were in the locker room, that were on the ice, those things helped as much.
It's a lot of players, actually, too.
Hacked out half of the starting defense, and two more are virtually gone already with Hunwick and Wilson's basically benched.
Yeah.
They've made so many changes, and also the Sacco culture. Again, the culture of the team that needed to change. the culture of the players that needed to change, and the cancer and the cancerous quote unquote players. I don't know. Maybe they're probably really nice guys.
I'm sure they are.
But the honest truth is that they weren't going to an NHL player's potential. And some of that can be attributed to Waugh. Some of that can also be attributed to an organization that made the decisions to say, we need to get rid of these problems. I agree that Waugh has brought wonderful things. I would say you're like, what, like 2-to-1 ratio maybe, but you know that yeah. He's on top of that too, you know, that he's two and the getting rid of the other stuff. But there's more factors than just Waugh.
Sure.
Waugh has done a lot, but just remember that there's other reasons.
Good point. I like it. Patrick Waugh, it's easy to point at him first.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he deserves a lot of credit as well.
Jack Adams Award is for the coach that has the team that turned it around, whether that coach was that guy or not.
If he wins it, it's going to be representative of a lot of moves that Joe Sakic made, Sherman, all the guys in the front office, as well as Waugh, doing what he does with his team.
Absolutely. And, yeah. You know, also Nathan MacKinnon, we don't know what he's like in the locker room. He's kind of quiet. He's not a great interview all the time, but he's, you know, we don't know what he's like in the locker room. Maybe he's more or less of a leader than he appears. You know, Matt Duchene has really stepped up in his leadership role. Look who they go to immediately after a game. They don't always go to Landeskog. They almost always go to Duchene to talk. Yeah. And that's leadership there too.
Absolutely.
Whether you're wearing the C on your chest or not.
Absolutely.
Anyways, there you go.
No, we got it. March 12th, the Avalanche against the Blackhawks. They win 3-2. Stastny's still out with his back, so the Avalanche call out Brad Malone and Paul Carey from Lake Erie, and they play on the fourth line with Patrick Bordolo. Paul Carey makes his NHL debut.
He was fast.
We were at this game. He was flying. He almost scored during his first shift, which I thought would have been a great storyline.
Oh, yeah.
But he didn't.
He didn't. And that's okay. It was, wow. He just turned on the Jets at one point, going up the ice.
That was his first shift, yeah.
Yeah.
He took off.
Yeah.
He's fast. Early in the first, EJ on the power play hit the inside of the post again. There was some premature honkage there. Shout out to Jarrell Patch. Brad Malone in the first period is his second career NHL goal. Matt Duchene, 19 seconds into the second period with his hashtag backhand roof snipe. And then Patrick Kane does something very similar. This is a good game. A lot of good hockey players out there on the ice, obviously.
We had a lot of fun at this game.
Yeah, Ryan O'Reilly, game winner during the 5-on-3 in the third period with the dagger.
The Chelsea dagger.
That's right. Take that. Matt Duchene, a goal and assist. And Varley, 37 saves for his 100th career win. Fourth Russian-born goaltender to accomplish that. Nabokov, Hobby Bulin, and Brizgalov are the others.
God, Brizgalov, he's just a hot mess.
Were there more? He is, and he's awesome that way. Don't change. Were there more Bruins fans there last game or more Blackhawks fans there when we were there?
I think there were more Bruins fans there game, but again, the Bruins hadn't played in the Pepsi Center for almost 3 years. They had that date circled.
There was a lot of lead up to it.
And you see a couple of like the old quote unquote, and I'm just saying what it is, like the old Indian Chief headdress style hat. Right. Yeah. But I actually ran into a couple of Bruins fans who had those bear coats.
I saw that in a couple different places.
Oh my God. They were fun. And they were so nice.
They were nice. Good.
Yeah.
That's good to hear.
Anyways.
All right,
we'll talk about the Bruins game in a moment.
That's right. March 14th, the Avalanche, just before the game, the Avalanche announced they've signed John Mitchell and Reto Berra, both the 3-year deals. Mm-hmm. John Mitchell immediately responds later that day and scores the first goal of the game. So I say you sign him to a new contract every game.
Every shift.
Yeah, might as well just do that.
Every period at least.
Can we have you come out here? Here's a pin.
Couple more.
Not sure where to even start with this game. I went to this one as well. Second period. So the Avalanche are up 1-0 going the second period. Harmless, right? Mm-hmm. 9 goals in the second period. Daniel, Chronicles of Winnick. Yep. Shout out to Tape Leg on that one. Jamie McGinn scores on the power play. So then it's 2-2. No problem. Or no, 2-1. Then the Ducks score 5 straight. 5 goals on 24 Duck shots. Varley was done after that. It just wasn't his night, and the Ducks are obviously a very good hockey club as well. Jamie McGinn scores again on the power play, and Gabriel Landeskog, his 20th goal of the season. I'll talk about that in a second. 33 seconds later to make it 5-4 late in the second period, and you know the energy was back, and you know we're heading towards this great third period, and the Ducks come right back 30 seconds later and score again, and that was the end of the scoring. I don't know if I've ever seen I can't remember the last time I saw 9 goals total in a game. It's been a little while, let alone in one period.
Total in a game, that would be last night with the Flames versus the Oilers, 8-1.
Good old – well, the Avalanche lost the Canadiens 6-3, too. But I think maybe it was 9 goals in one period. I don't think I've ever seen that. That's well, like I described, it was nuts.
I've seen a lot of minor league hockey games. I can't remember any time I've seen that many either.
It was just every time you look up, there was honkage everywhere, and it was and non-honkage, and I don't know. Gabriel Landeskog, like I said, his 20th goal in the second period. Shout out to C. Nicolette. I don't know who this guy is. He's in Canada. Avs_tweets at as.
Who do you think you are? Huh? I don't know. We don't know who you are.
No, he's gotten some great things. He actually mentioned the other day, which is something you never hear on Twitter. He's like, you know what? I like having an Avs only account that has very few followers because I can just say what I want. So I need to do some research as far as who he is. I saw him mentioned by somebody, but he's got a lot of great Avalanche info. So Avs_tweets. The Avalanche are currently the only NHL team with 5 different 20-plus goal scorers on their roster. Chicago and St. Louis each have 4.
Wow.
Ryan O'Reilly, Matt Duchene, Nathan MacKinnon, and Paul Stastny, along with Landeskog. That's some balanced scoring attack, along with, a decent defense that hangs in there when they need to and plays well by committee. And then you've got Varley that leads to the great season that the Avalanche have had so far.
All 5 of those guys drafted by the Avs.
Yeah.
All 5 of those guys started right away with the club. Didn't spend time in, I don't think, maybe O'Reilly. I don't think
Ryan O'Reilly did. He did.
He was up with the club the entire time.
He was one of the very few second round picks, including Stastny. They're both second round picks that actually played on the big club right away. That doesn't happen very often.
Didn't play in Lake Erie.
Yep.
None of it. All 5 of those guys. By contrast, look at your top guys in Edmonton and how they've been doing since they've been drafted there. And they all, most of them, same deal. You got your Yakupov, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Taylor Hall, on and on. You got these guys who, this is the performance you kind of expect from those guys.
Yeah. I didn't do the research on the 420 goal scorers for Chicago and St. Louis, but I doubt many of them were actually drafted by that team. So
probably not. That's unusual for a team to have that much homegrown talent. And P.A. Parento, he was brought in, but he's been he's been working out. Same with
Jamie McGinn. Is another one.
He has
18 goals.
He was hot at first, and he when he first came in, he's cooled a little bit.
Yeah.
You're right, 18 goals.
Yeah.
Mitchell's only got 9 goals. Wow.
He had a long streak where he didn't score at all.
Yeah.
But he scored in this game and I believe the next one as well. Matt Duchene's point streak ended at this in this game at 9 games. So we've had some long point streaks. And Landeskog's had a couple long ones as well. What do you think about Eric Johnson's match penalty for the cross check to Matthew Perreault? Did you see that at all?
I don't remember. No, I did not.
Was immediately 5-minute major, immediately tossed. I can't remember if this was during the second period. So I imagine the Ducks scored at least 1 goal because everybody scored in the second period.
Was not suspended.
I was kind of surprised by that. I think it's because Perreault was fine. He didn't even miss a shift, but he basically hit him high. I don't know if you saw it, but you got your bottom hand usually turned separately. He actually turned his hand over on here and hit him with his glove. He hit him with the top hand and hit him right in the face with his glove. So I think if Perreault had gotten hurt, or had missed any time, or at least missed the rest of the game, I think Eric Johnson gets another call from the boys in the NHL.
I called the NHL Department of Player Safety, and they said that they were on vacation right now.
Okay.
And they'll get back to you as soon as they can.
Did they appreciate your business?
They appreciate your patience. They put you on hold.
And you're still holding.
Yeah.
Do you need to check if you're still on hold?
Because there's been a few hits lately where you just think, man, this guy's going to get 2 games. Nothing. There's not even a hearing.
They're putting the whistles away.
Yeah, I think he's got Brendan Shanahan has a cold.
He's just tired.
Anyways.
A lot of suspensions. So I was kind of surprised. I was thinking he would at least get a call. Maybe he did. I don't know. But, again, they usually go by if the guy gets hurt. And Perreault wasn't hurt, but Eric Johnson did receive a match penalty. I don't think they rescinded the match penalty, which, has implications. You don't see him very often, but all right, EJ, calm down, man. It just was not the best time. I think the third period could have used Eric Johnson, and he obviously wasn't there because he got tossed early in the second. So, the piece that I was mentioning from Adrian Dater on Patrick Waugh ran on March 16th in the Denver Post. Even Ken Hitchcock had some nice things to say about Patrick Waugh, and I know they don't get along that well. He's gotten his team to play the right way, said St. Louis Blues coach Ken Hitchcock. They're hard to play against. They don't win just because they've got talent. They win because they play the right way. They don't cheat the game. Whoever gets them in the playoffs has got one of the hardest matchups they're ever going to see because you've got young players with all kinds of skill that know how to play the game the right way. Those are some pretty big words coming from an interdivision opponent's coach.
And a guy who basically slagged him at the beginning of the season.
Yeah. So I don't. Yeah, I thought that was a great piece by Dater. Like I said, when he tries and he has the time and his role allows him to, I think he's got some good things to say. So we will post that up as well. Also within this article, Sacco comparisons continue. Matt Duchene in this one, we're playing the way our team is built. We're continuously trying to get better, but everybody has a smile on their face. It's so much better.
Yeah,
I don't know whether it's not directly at Sacco. I think winning makes things better.
Yeah.
But I mean, it definitely is.
And where is Joe Sacco right now? Buffalo. How's Buffalo doing? Thank you. I'll bring that up every podcast for the rest of the season if I have to. I mean,
should we do it early or later or nah, just whenever you feel like it?
Yeah, whenever I feel like it. I'm just going to bring
Sacco.
Joe Sacco in Buffalo, still sucks.
Standing
bye.
Update. Here we go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, just like we were talking about with trades, performance is what matters. Was performing better than anybody imagined. We've got another I've got another one coming up about from Puck Daddy. We'll talk about that in a moment. But yep. Yeah.
There it is. March 16th, the Avalanche at the Senators. They win 3-1. Andre Benoit scores the first goal of the game, and I'm sure it always feels good scoring against a team that lets you go. Primary assist to Patrick Bortoleau, and it was pretty. Bortoleau, I guess, had over 100 people there to watch him, and it was pretty cool that he could kind of celebrate with them.
Wow.
Nick Holden on the power play in the third period and John Mitchell late in the third period. The Senators score with less than 10 seconds left to spoil the shutout. Matt Duchene, 2 assists. Varley, 38 saves, and a great bounce back game from that second period against the Ducks. That could have been kind of a big deal. March 17th, James found a piece by previously mentioned Roy McGregor.
Oh, I'm sorry. He writes for the Globe and Mail. I said Ottawa Sun. I was incorrect.
Toronto, right? Yeah.
Globe and Mail. They're kind of like USA Today, so they're kind of a national.
All
so
over
they
the place. Have,
yeah, he's based in Ottawa.
Okay. All right. So this was about Nathan MacKinnon.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to elaborate on that?
No.
No?
Okay. No. It was a very nice article. We'll post to it. He just basically talking about how Waugh has, you know, utter faith in MacKinnon. And, you know, of course, when you have a coach that said, no, I think we should draft this guy because I've seen him play and he's really good. I want to coach that kid.
And then they made it happen.
You make it happen. And yeah, you're going to have confidence. He's been given the opportunity. MacKinnon's made the most of it. And that's why he keeps getting better and better and given more and more ice time.
Good stuff.
Anyways, Roy McGregor, read his stuff. He had a great book called Road Games. It was about the first season of the Senators and leading up to it and what else was happening in the NHL at the time. If you look at – I don't know if I've ever brought this book up on this podcast before. If you look at the NHL and where it is right now and you go back and then you read – Road Games, you're going to see so many similarities. Even after the lockouts, even after the rule changes, even after millions of more dollars are thrown at players, all of these things, you're going to look at this and go, oh my God, when is the NHL going to learn? It's amazing.
Maybe someday.
Someday. Not yet.
Not today. March 18th, Pierre LeBrun on ESPN.com has a piece about Patrick Waugh. For me to see him do so well with the Avalanche, it's far from a surprise, said Bob Hartley. Patrick is a man with a plan. He knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Puck Daddy also posted a piece on Waugh coming back to Montreal. And I totally agree with you. I know we've talked about it just a little bit. It's too bad the hockey wasn't the main thing when it came to this game. I guess it was easy to hype everything up, but it just seemed almost, anticlimactic as compared to the game, because I think that's what it should be about. And I think Patrick Waugh would have rather had it that way too.
Yeah.
But it was something to talk about.
One of the things that Puck Daddy said, and this was kind of interesting to me, Waugh's image rehabilitation has been underreported and underestimated aspect of his coaching career. What once was a malcontent is now a company man. What was a wild-eyed coach that could tear into his own team has now become a calming presence for the Avalanche, getting smartest guy in the room accolades written about him. In a year with multiple worthy candidates, Waugh's going to win the Jack Adams. Tell me you saw that coming when he was readjusting the glass in front of Bruce Boudreau in the NHL debut. You know, I thought the company man comment was interesting because when Joe Sacco was kind of a company man, But we're looking at two very different cultures in a company here. Joe Sacco was, you know, everything's fine, everything's great. He was a manager. Patrick Waugh is a leader. And there's a big difference between leaders and managers. And when you have a company culture, and, you know, this is a sports franchise, like it or not, they are a company. But when you have the support of the company, when you have that kind of company culture, you can have that calming effect, be the smartest guy in the room, and be a leader and not have to resort to other silliness. He is bringing the same intensity that he was before. And it doesn't have to be shoving the glass. It doesn't have to be wanting to knock something over and get after Bruce Boudreau. You know, it's.
Although I would have liked to have seen that.
Oh, everybody would have liked to have seen it. But at the same time, then, you know, but can you sustain that? Can you sustain a circus culture like that? And I think that he's just brought a very different culture.
I think Waugh knew he had an opportunity there to show his team that he was behind him in the very first game of the season. Mm-hmm. And it kind of happened in the 6-4 game as well.
It was it's been fairly organic. It wasn't
state. Corey Perry, well, the thing is in that game, though, too, is Bordalo gets tossed.
Yeah.
I mean, the divider is working overtime again. Peter McNabb was actually between the benches for this one, too. But Bordalo.
The calming presence of Peter McNabb, the second guy into the stands in Boston.
Which guy took his shoe off? Peter McNabb, put your shoe back on. But Bordalo reaches around and punches a player in the chest. He gets tossed. The other player gets tossed. Corey Perry
checks the glass to make sure it's stable.
Corey Perry again is in that situation, leaning over the glass, saying what he needs to. He's trying to get in people's kitchen, and it's I don't know, maybe that's the opponent for the Avalanche when they eventually get the outdoor game. Hopefully, you know, they're starting to develop some I guess feelings for each other. But I think Patrick Graham knew what he was doing in that situation the very first game of the year, and he wanted to show his players he was behind them. And he saw that opportunity, took advantage of it. He's a smart guy. He knows what he's doing.
He's a smart guy, but it was certainly a charged atmosphere. Yeah. This is not
it was a little know, both.
Opening night,
yeah.
First time back, crowd is pumped, things are happening.
You were there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lovejoy takes, you know, tries to go knee on knee with McKinnon, you know, welcome to the NHL. Yeah, he's gonna I wouldn't be surprised if there was a little bit of emotion out of control also, you know, but in the end, what happened wasn't a bad thing, and it wasn't the thing that everybody thought was going to happen over and over and over.
He's a little more strategic with it now. I think he realizes just doing it's not going to be enough sometimes.
If there was a great example of we're going to beat them on this, we're going to make them pay on the scoreboard, this is it.
Yeah.
He can shove the glass as many times as he wants and lose games and it won't help. He's winning games, doesn't have to.
Let's go back to Tony Granato. He was good at shoving the glass type things too, but
was it standing on the bench when he was with the Penguins, just standing there staring at the other coach when he was screaming at him? Oh, Granato was hilarious.
Just ask him.
So yeah, it's Patrick Waugh night in Montreal. You know, Patrick Waugh's return. So many press conferences. Everybody's got to win the game for Patrick Waugh.
Let's play some hockey.
Yeah, Jean-Sebastien Giguère is back. You know, is home and net. You know, maybe a swan song. And how'd that work out, Jay?
Yeah,
not so great.
Good snark.
Thanks.
I like it.
After a while, I was tired of the storyline. I was
just
really tired of the storyline. Just that Patrick Waugh's back. Patrick Waugh's back. Hey, guess what? Patrick Waugh had played in Montreal since he left. And yeah, it was different. Yeah, it was after the everybody make nice, after they retired his number, all of that kind of thing. But boy, what a huge distraction for what could have been a really, really good game. Instead, things just fell apart.
Patrick Waugh gave it the old company line, and he was like, I appreciate what they did. They kept it low key, which I like, but I know he's probably glad that's over. And the next time the Avalanche go there, it's not going to be as big of a deal. And
then
hopefully it'll be a better game. By the way, the Avalanche lose that game 6-3. Nathan McKinnon has a beast mode shift early in the game and scores Talbot in the second, Jamie McGinn in the third. But things unravel for the Avalanche in the third. Did you want to talk about Nick Holden just a little bit? Let's talk about the Bruins game?
Okay. But Giguère was pretty bad in this one. For all the talk of the positional goaltending, you know, he got out. He was pulled out of position a lot.
That happens too.
There was a goal where he was about 8 feet, 10 feet in front of his net, and all the actions going on behind him.
Yeah, the leading pass actually ended up behind him, then it going into the slot.
Yeah, yeah. He looked like Thomas Vanek. It was not good. Not Vanek, Vokoun. Sorry, looked like Vokoun out there. It was horrible.
Or Abisher early. John Mitchell with an ugly back first slam into the boards.
Oh.
Yeah, I've got a picture of this in the post that you guys can check out. But he's been joking about it on Twitter, so he's obviously okay. I know the Avalanche are big on not allowing players that are injured to actually talk to the press, but especially since he's tweeting, I'd say that's a good sign, and I'd imagine he'd be back pretty soon.
He was pretty much folded up with his, you know, in half with his feet over his head. It was just stunning.
When he hit the, I looked for some video and couldn't find any, but I think the picture will do it some justice. When he hit the boards, he went about a foot off the ice and then came back down. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a dangerous sport.
Yeah, if you ever wonder why, like a player going after the puck in the board, you know, towards the boards, holds up, you know, slows down and lets the other guy go first, you know, lose a puck battle that way. This is why. It's not a matter of, sometimes it's a matter of we just can't stop, but, you know, because of where your feet are, where that extra stride came from. But, you know, there's a reason that these guys have to hold up.
It's called instinct. Yeah, it's called trying to protect your body
as
much as you can.
You know, you got a guy coming in, especially if you're chasing a guy into the boards. You know, if you see his numbers, you got to hold up. Well, at some point, you got to hold up. Well, this was a little different. This was getting tied up.
Yeah, they got tangled up.
But this is why full speed guys going at, you know, crashing the net and the like, it can get dangerous.
Well, I think with hybrid icing as well, I think what they have right now, stuff like that could happen a little more often if they didn't change it. I like it so far. There's really no reason to complain about it. And I think there hasn't been one injury when it comes to this stuff.
I don't think so. Not this season. I think that there's been a couple of times where it seemed a little ambiguous. Yeah. But, you know, whenever you give discretion to the referees and to the linesmen, every call they make that there's discretion, they kind of have to prove their worthiness of it.
Yeah.
I love taking the ambiguousness out of it. But at the same time, these are guys that have to make a call depending on, you know, what they see and what they perceive to who's going to get there first sometimes. It's pretty rare that it's actually as much of a foot race these days.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's okay.
I think they give the advantage to the icing. I think they've blown whenever it's about 50-50, they blow it dead. And that's, I think they've been consistent with it.
Yeah.
So I don't mind as long as they're consistent with it. And I think it's been a really good rule change and it's kept the players healthy.
I agree.
So yeah, it's been good. March 19th, the Avalanche play at Winnipeg and lose. I don't want to call it unexpectedly, but Avs fans were not very happy after this one. They lost 5-4 in overtime. Reto Berra started. It was his first game as an Avalanche and he struggled. But again, James will talk about it in a second. Some of this has to do with a brand new team.
A lot of it has to do with the defense as well.
But the first goal was 20 seconds in by Ryan O'Reilly. Gabriel Landeskog tied it late in tied the game at 2 in the first. Nick Holden tied the game at 3 in the second, and Cody McLeod tied the game at 3rd and tied the game at 4 in the third. So the Avalanche come back 3 times in this game, which was good to see, and that's one thing.
It's not something you would have expected with a goal coming against the Jets 20 seconds in. It's like, oh good, the route is on already.
No, and then they had to come back each time.
Yeah.
And Gabriel Landeskog said, if we're going to take something from this game, although they got a point, which is always good on the road, he said, we came back 3 times, and we can definitely celebrate that.
Yeah.
Max Talbot, 2 assists. Blake Wheeler, who is just kind of an Avalanche killer, a really great shot on his game winner.
Oh, man.
He also skated by the bench. Did you see this one? He skated.
No.
He has a lot of different ways that he could go back to his team or go back to the locker room. He went right in front of the Avalanche bench, and I'm not sure if he said something, or I'm sure if Bortolo was feeling frisky that game, he could have reached out and said something to him. But it was just Rycroft also said something. He noticed it after the game too, and he was talking about Wheeler's celly and whatever. But Blake Wheeler also plays really well against the Avalanche, so good
dude,
for him.
You
can do what you want.
Get your shots in while you can. I mean, yeah.
win the game.
Yeah,
and
he didn't
have to
skate by somebody and take a little. Oh, my stick was over there. Sorry, I tagged you in the back of the ankle.
Whoops.
You know, whatever. Yeah. It's gamesmanship. Well, these guys don't have to be. You know.
Especially Winnipeg. I mean, I think some of the point is like, well, just look at the standings. I think it'll make you feel a little bit better as an Avalanche.
They're still, the Winnipeg Thrashers live on. I mean, geez.
4 goals normally in the NHL should be enough to win a game, but it wasn't, and sometimes that happens.
Well, when Blake Wheeler, I mean, that was a beautiful goal.
Oh, it was awesome.
He danced in. The very first thing that happens is one of the, I think it was Barry, went down to...
Oh, man, there looked like a car wreck in front of the net.
He goes down, tries to swing his stick at the puck.
He lost the puck, too. Everybody lost the puck.
Blake's like, I don't think so.
No,
your first indicator that things are going wrong is when you dive down and start just waving at the puck. There's a reason why in the NHL, and really in any hockey, any hockey anywhere. Play the body, not the puck. And this includes rec hockey. Okay, and I've gotten crazy looks from people when you first say play the body, not the puck in rec hockey, because people go, oh, but there's no checking.
You can't check.
Playing the body doesn't mean checking. Playing the body means you stay with the guy, not just the puck. When you reach out to swipe the puck, that's when things go wrong. Your stick is small. The puck is small. There's a lot of room to go for error there. What there isn't is riding a guy off to the corners, staying with him, tying up his stick rather than just swiping at a puck. You can't, and staying with a guy, you don't just stop and lunge. You play the body. If the guy's going towards you, you stay with the body. This is, and as soon as you go down and start swinging around, it's like, oh man.
I think almost every Avalanche player did that. I was expecting because of what it looked like in front of the net to watch the replay. I was like, I think I actually said it out loud. I'm like, who ran into Berra here? Something happened in front of
the
net.
It was like there was an earthquake. Everybody was just dropped. Everybody stopped, dropped, and rolled. It was horrible.
Berra lost the puck. MacKinnon was actually the one right in front of Blake Wheeler when he shot it. MacKinnon was on the seat of his pants. They showed EJ after the goal. He had a stick on his knees and was just like, oh, man. But I mean.
Oh, he absolutely undressed them. It was hilarious.
It was a good play. You
can we talk about Berra for a moment
we
in this
may.
Game?
Absolutely.
I thought the Berra played fine. Everybody freaked out about Berra. Berra played his very first game with the Avalanche. And it's not just a matter of people think, oh, okay, he's got a better defense now. He should be, you know, it should be no problem. No. If you take two defensemen of equal skill and different styles, you're going to have to figure out what the other guy's going to do. Same thing with going from one goaltender to a brand new goaltender. What's that goaltender going to do? You don't see, you know, Giguere does not play the same as Varley, and Varley does not play the same as Berra, and you know, and you have to get used to what these guys are going to do also. Where they normally kick their rebounds, where how much does this guy play out of the net versus in the net, things like that. And what are these defensemen going to do? The going from bad defense to good defense is only part of the equation. He's going to get used to these guys. I think there's nothing to worry about.
He'll play better. He absolutely will. You know, I think them signing him to a 3-year deal before he even played a game says a lot about what they saw in the Olympics and what they mm-hmm. saw move leading up to the trade deadline. And he'll be fine. It was just, I think everybody expected him to come out and earn his contract with one game or one period or one shot. And that's obviously not going to happen. So,
Tyson Berry was moved up as a forward in this game.
He was,
which I thought was interesting.
The Bruins, yeah.
It was really interesting to watch him go. And, I think that defensively, he's a better player than Nick Holden. And if Holden's scoring goals, let's move Nick Holden up.
You know, I kind of like that idea.
Let's just see what happens there, because I honestly believe, and this is, you know, Holden kind of, I know he's my whipping boy. I know I'm getting on his case. At the Bruins game, There was this guy in front of me, and he was a little drunk and looked a little crazy. He was saving for tickets by not getting haircuts, apparently.
Yes, yes.
And he had like this Beatles with mutton chops kind of look to him. It was kind of weird, and a dirty coat. And he almost got in a fight with a Bruins guy in front of him, and there was, you know, words said.
It was naughty words.
And I'm busted on Nick Holden, and the dude turns around, he's like, 8 goals.
And?
8 goals.
And?
Like, and I said exactly what I've always said about Nick Holden. You still have to play defense. You still have to catch passes. How many times on power plays are we going to see a hard pass come to Nick Holden, bobble it, maybe lose the zone, and lose time on it? You have to be able to handle the puck. You have to be able to catch the puck and be ready to do something with it. And Holden just doesn't quite have that yet. Somebody needs to sit there and just toss grenades at him. You know, just fire pucks at him as hard as they can and get him catching those pucks and feeling better with that thing. I think that he has some good stuff, but there are also times when he's costing the team opportunities by his defensive play. I want to see him succeed, and yet he's not succeeding at the things that he needs to. 8 goals is great, you know, but you know, that's if he's just there to score goals, make him a forward.
Patrick Waugh had been playing P.A. Parenteau on the point on the power play before Parenteau got hurt. And mm-hmm. I think that's where Holden's getting a little more time than he normally wouldn't have.
Yeah.
I'm starting to get a little worried about Tyson Berry as far as where exactly does he fit in. I think he's better on the blue line, but you'll find not more times than not. But I notice and he's not quite big enough and strong enough on a stick to be able to stop these big forwards that park themselves in front of the net or on a rush when he's trying to back check. And I don't know. I don't think him moving to forward is going to be a permanent thing. I think he's better along the blue line.
Yeah.
But then I worry about what the kickback is for that. So
he's a John Mitchell Lyles type. John Michael Lyles type.
Yeah. No, I agree.
He's more the puck moving mobile defenseman.
Yep. He's what he lacks in size is he's going to give up a few goals. So he makes up for it. His pass to Nick Holden in this game was fabulous. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a little saucer that landed right on Holden's stick and he ends up scoring, which is a great goal. I don't know. I'm curious I'm kind of wondering where Tyson Barrie fits into this Avalanche's future, whether it's on the blue line or up front.
That's a good question. I think he'll be on the blue line.
I
think you pair him with the right guy.
Right.
And
maybe they don't have that guy right now. Who knows?
I mean, it's possible. Yeah. It would be interesting to see him play with Jan Hatta. I know that, there's the Johnson Hatta matchup.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Barrie on that just for a game to see what happened. Or a couple games, let them get used to each other. You got the mobile guy, and then you've got the big guy. It'd just be interesting.
That's right. March 21st, the Avalanche lose to the Bruins, first shutout for the first time this year. 71st game into the season, they get shut out.
The last team to be shut out in the NHL,
right.
The absolute last team to be shut out.
And the Bruins had been shut out one time this season. By the Colorado Avalanche. They traded 2-0 games against each other.
This Bruins team, they're on fire. Right now they've won, as of this recording on Sunday, they have won 12 games in a row. They are not slowing down. This is a team that lost Tyler Seguin, gave up on Tyler Seguin, Rich Peverley, Andrew Ferentz, Nathan Horton. Those are four really good players that all left the team after losing the Stanley Cup last season, and the Bruins are the first team to clinch the playoffs.
Pretty tough. Pretty tough and big and strong.
Good
and,
team.
And, playoff tested. And,
that
came out. The Avalanche played a great first period, but I think one thing this young club needs to learn as they move forward is that when you have chances to score, you have to. Whether it's the third period or whether it's the first period, when you get a chance to score against the Bruins, you have to bury it. I think the Avalanche knew that, got a little more frustrated as the game went on.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Waugh pulls Varley with four and a half, five minutes, right around in there.
Yeah.
Fabulous move.
And the Bruins didn't score.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Unbelievable. Four and a half minutes with no goalie. And almost the entire time, there was probably about 30 seconds maybe where the puck was either in the neutral zone or in the Avs end.
Pretty cool.
Amazing.
It was a great sequence.
That's a team that, what was it earlier that was said about Wah and his system? This was from, you didn't mention this in this, but this was part of that Denver, Adrian Dater post on Patrick Wah. From that article, he said, he instilled a new five-unit defensive system in which tracking, back-checking, and positional awareness of others was paramount. That is something that you can't, if you have an empty net and you don't know where your teammates are on the ice, you're going to get hosed. It's that simple. You don't have guys to back you up. And I think that's part of why he feels so comfortable, because everybody's playing into that system.
The earlier he pulls Varley, Jiggy, Berra, the more I like Wah. I just think it makes sense. And Wah said, why cram? And they interview him after the game, obviously, like they do. And they said, why would you pull him that soon? He's like, we needed more time. Against this team, we needed more than a minute and a half to try and score two goals. So he just did it then. It's like, that makes total sense.
This isn't the Stanley Cup Finals where it only takes 17 seconds to beat the Bruins.
Ouch. I wonder if the Avs were where they have been and they were down that low, and if Wah decided to pull Varley, would people think of it differently? I'm sure they would. I'm just trying to think on the other side here. Say they're out of the playoffs already and he pulls Varley with 4.5. Would it be like, oh, he's given up? But right now it's like genius because of where they are in the standings and the way he can explain it and describe it after the game.
Yeah, it's a bit of perception, but
I don't know.
It's hard to say.
I like that.
Yeah.
So the Avalanche just have a hard time. Get a lot of love from everybody. I mean, it's Jack Edwards, the play-by-play, the television play-by-play.
Crazy Jack Edwards.
We love Jack Edwards. The Avs sure play entertaining hockey. No breaks. B-R-A-K-E-S, B-R-E-A-K-S. And then full speed, full time. The smallest cracks in Boston's game turn into chances.
Yeah.
That's a pretty cool breakdown from somebody who's seen a lot of good hockey over the years. And still a lot of respect coming to the Avalanche's way, and I think it's well deserved.
The only real issue that I had with this game for the Avalanche was that a lot of the shots that they took, especially in the second and third periods, weren't really dangerous shots. They seemed to be coming from odd angles.
I think that's the way the Bruins like it.
Oh yeah, and I mean, that's obviously part of that is putting things, you know, to the sides, but also I think there was a little bit of a panic mode going on when you have 31 shots on goal and 20 of them don't seem dangerous at all. Like, you know, the first period had a lot of good stuff, but then, you know, they're getting hard angles shots, and that's kind of being a little concerned about the goalie, and, you know, we got to sneak something in on this guy.
McNabb was saying that it was probably the first time he had seen this Avs team actually like frustrated. I'm sure they'll work on it and they'll fix it, and they have some time off to be able to fix it. So
3-game losing streak, you know, that'll do it to you. But at the same time,
they have 1 point. One was an overtime loss, but I hear what you're saying.
It's, you know, we got a question from
wait for it.
James is badass on Twitter.
Yes.
James_is_badass. And I have to thank him for his actual name is Colin. And he actually was talking about me and that I am a bad. No, it's not.
Oh,
true.
It's a tribute. His real name tribute is James. Twitter name.
He has his avatar. He's like showing his muscles.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yes. Do you feel a little skid in the Avs will affect their play in the playoffs? Is there a team out there that has not faced any adversity at all out there? No. And that's part of how you come together. That's part of how teams work. When it's an 82 game season, it's a long slog at times. When you've got those times in the middle of December, when you are coming into, when you're in February, it's like, geez, can we just get to the playoffs? These are the things that also help build a team. And here, I think these guys are going to learn from it. There hasn't been a time that this Avalanche team hasn't seemed to learn from something or get better from adversity. The old Joe Sacco team, it was, oh, everything's fine, we're okay, company line, blah, blah, blah. There was nothing to learn because, oh, it was just a couple of bad bounces. No, this is just something that you eventually experience and you get through.
We're just trying to start the game on time.
Ugh. Yeah.
What was the other point? I think I'd be a little more nervous, I guess, if you want to call it that, if I'm the Bruins or somebody playing really great hockey kind of leading up to. There's only, like I said earlier in the show, there's only one way to go after that. Once you start going down, you're not quite sure how your team is going to react. The Avalanche have proven that they can bounce back pretty quickly. Yeah. I'm not saying the Bruins will or will not. I'd rather get kind of this play out of their system, kind of get it to where they make the small adjustments that they need to start playing better and start leading up into the playoffs. And I'm just happy we're talking about this, first of all. But, I mean, I think it doesn't matter what seed you are. Home ice is home ice. It is what it is. But, I mean, if you can play your best hockey going into the playoffs, you're going to do all right. Yeah. And the Bruins are playing their best hockey right now.
Oh, yeah.
So it really doesn't matter what team you are. Records don't mean anything. Home ice doesn't mean as much as it used to. You just have to be playing really solid hockey going into. So I'd rather have the Avalanche play a little like this now, work it out, and then going in, they can be a little bit stronger and know that they've gone through it and can adjust to it.
If I could break down these three games, this streak in Montreal, you've got a very desperate team who's hunting for every.
Winnipeg was about the same. They're not quite
every. Yeah, but they're hunting for every point that they can. And you have a goaltender anomaly. Yeah, with the way that Jaguar played, you know, he was great in the first, and then it just broke down. In Winnipeg, you've got a team that is in the hunt still. They're doing their best. They need every point that they can, and they're pretty much, you know, this is a poke the bear team. This is a team that essentially could be a really good rivalry. They're almost like the Avs were to the Red Wings when the Avs were falling apart.
Yeah.
They want the rivalry. They want to be good enough to really earn the rivalry. And Winnipeg is that team that you know, now that they're in this Central Division, they need to find a new rival, and they're looking at the Avalanche as that. Then you have this Bruins team that's extremely good, and the Avs played well
They
played well enough to beat half the teams in this league, if not two-thirds of this.
Absolutely.
But not the Bruins yet, because the Bruins were just that good. And you know what? When you go up against a team that's that good, that can turn something in, you know, turn something out of nothing, you learn from that. Yeah. And you really, if you want to go, if they went into the playoffs riding high, like they were beating everybody and didn't know what turn it on really looked like. And again, this is a team that doesn't have a lot of playoff experience over the last several years. this was a good indicator. I think that this streak, although it sucks for us as fans, it's only three games out of 82, and there were enough anomalies, and it could be a good experience for them.
They're fine. All right, just Ryan from Albuquerque. Ryan, appreciate your question. Just wondering what you think about the remaining players the Avs have to re-sign while they keep Barry, Benoit, Sarge, and McGinn. Obviously, some of them will go, but who has the highest chance of sticking around?
Yes, no, no, yes.
I think there was four of them.
Yes, no, yes.
Yes, no. You don't think Benoit? Benoit's on the bubble. Right. Hashtag Benoit bubble.
Number one, Barry. Yeah, they're going to resign. Absolutely. McGinn.
He's restricted.
I think McGinn gets resigned just because why not? I think he's a good third line player.
Those two guys, I think are your definites. I think Benoit's on the bubble. I think Sarge is done.
I think Sarge is probably, if Sarge is done, he's going to retire.
I think so too.
He's had a long career. But he has been playing well lately. He had a bad streak in the middle of the season. Beginning of the season, he was great. Now he's doing pretty well. I think, you know, he and Benoit have made a good tandem in general. But he's not a 1-2 guy, and right now he's not really a 3-4 guy.
Yeah.
But you know, I think that there are too many defensemen on this team that are kind of playing up to 5-6 ability. I mean,
right.
Guerin and Holden are 5-6 guys, and Sarge is kind of on that bubble of being in the 5-6 area. So I think that if something better comes along, they'd rather have that than Sarge. I think Sarge goes to free agency.
I think so too.
Benoit, I'd say keep him. I think he's been a good number four defenseman. Yeah. But I think if the Avs can upgrade to a number three position, which, you know, Barry kind of is.
Could be.
But if you give Barry a good shot with somebody else, maybe that works out.
Who knows? Yeah. I think chemistry has a lot to do with it as well, especially with a guy like Benoit. So
agreed.
We'll see. Jason Hotzinger, Jax Long on Twitter. Besides personnel, why is this team different from the Flash in the Pan 09-10 team, or is it different? I think we talk. I want to go back to what all the things you said earlier as far as personnel, chemistry, coaching. I think a combination of all those has just made this team. This is not a Flash in the Pan team. If they would have cooled off halfway through the season and they would have just packed it in from there, well, we'd be having a different conversation, but they've proven over and over that they can play with the best teams in the league and that they're here for the long haul, it looks like.
There's like four big things and 100 small things that have really turned this team around from that time. I don't think that team was a flash of the pan. That team kind of was. They were, but at the same time, you know, the personnel, the coaching is different, the culture is different. The excitement in the stands is different.
Joe Sakic was on that team.
Yeah.
I mean, he was hurt, but
yeah,
he was on that team.
He was, you know, there's just so much. There's so much different.
Andy was playing out of his mind at that point. I mean, it's hard to compare.
Yeah. And really the track, like the storyline from that, you know, through that team to the failures of the next couple seasons, kind of hold consistent.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you have a massive derailment, but it's been a good one. You know, they had to get off those train tracks, and they did.
We have a couple more questions too.
Oh, geez.
Explain the success. This is Mike Klinsma. Hopefully I got your name right, bud. Explain the success of the Avs rebuild over the failure of the Oilers rebuild. We talk about it all the time. I think the Avs building from within, you got a system that works. They've got built-in leadership within. Guys have matured a lot quicker than I thought. I think Landeskog has matured a lot quicker than anybody thought he would. Thus, he is the captain.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things that go into that.
It's surprising how good the guys who they recently drafted have turned out to be.
Yes.
Especially considering how little faith anybody had in the Sherman administration, what was happening before, in the Giguere administration. You know, there's been drafting has been a big deal, but let's take a look at Dallas Eakins versus Patrick Waugh. You know, Dallas Eakins is not what I would consider an NHL coach right now. Yeah. He seems more Sacco than anything else.
He took his jacket off.
He got splashed by somebody getting frustrated by Taylor Hall getting frustrated and spiking a water bottle and got splashed and had some words, but you know, there's why, I don't know, they signed Brizgalov to be a solution for goaltending for a little while. You know, they didn't have great goaltending. They've brought in a lot of parts.
Bobby Bowen.
Yeah, there's just, but the parts haven't gelled.
And no,
there's
it's not
there's
that easy certain, to make it do that.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, there's you take a look at the Avalanche right now, and you've got a couple of guys from the glory, the quote unquote glory days of the Avalanche. You know, you've got Footer still hanging around and doing work with the team. Patrick Waugh, Joe Sack,
Billington is still around.
Yeah, yeah, there's you know, you have that culture, but at the same time, they've shifted it away from look what you had to live up to. The Edmonton Oilers are still this team that lives in the shadow of the Wayne Gretzky years.
They'll never play that well again.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's gotta be tough.
It is. I'm sure it is. You know, I can't imagine what that kind of pressure is like. Yeah. And at the same time, you know, how you shape that as a culture in your team is going to make a huge amount of difference. Patrick Waugh could have gone an entirely different route and been like, live up to what we did. And how would this team react? Probably pretty poorly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that we've kind of seen that. We saw that last season. High draft picks, you know, that were not getting the job done, that there were other problems that needed to be solved. And people are going, well, you know, look at the Oilers. They drafted all these guys, and look at the Avs. They drafted all these guys and they're all failing. There was more to it than that, obviously, and I think that's really played out.
Yeah, I agree. All right, one more. Jaden, nope. I'm not even going to try your last name. I will butcher it, and you will.
McHarg.
Yeah.
McHarg.
See?
I'm going with that.
I'm sure that's pretty close.
Sorry, Jaden, I'm the one who will take the chances on this and pay the price. You can hate me later.
I'm on the fence. Who are your favorite players outside the Avalanche currently in the NHL? I've got one, the name that I consistently go to, and he scored a beautiful goal this week. And that's Alex Hemsky. I've just always liked the way he's played. Nice. He's reminded me of Milan Hayduk, and I just loved Hayduk's style. So Hemsky's one that comes to my mind right away. Does anybody jump out at you? Right
away? I'm still a huge fan of Tyler Seguin. I really think that the guy's got the mitts.
He's got skills.
He does. And you know, whether he's got the attitude or not, you know, he's kind of has always been the question, but I think that he's come to Dallas and become a, you know, turned it on a bit, and he's become quite a good player there. That, you know,
yeah, I mean, good for him.
I'm going to say, of course, Solani.
Yeah.
Anze Kopitar is always,
I love Kopitar because he's big. He's a big guy that
oh, yeah,
moves well. I like those guys.
Patrick Kane, you know, you know, if it weren't for the Avalanche, you know, I could see myself really, really liking the Blackhawks.
Kane and Taves just don't have, they just, their personality comes out of their game. Yeah. Otherwise, you just don't see a lot of smiling. You don't see a lot of fun. They did a thing on NHL 36 on Kane, and he's like that off the ice too. He's just kind of serious and just, he's not real goofy, not real funny. Like, we know anything about that anyway.
Well, he had some issues also, yeah, you know.
So I think he's kind of guarded that way, but. Yeah. I mean,
Taves,
that backhand,
they call him Captain Serious.
Yes, for a reason. And it's just, you have to appreciate those guys too. Yeah. But that backhand goal that he scored against Varley and the Avs was.
I mean, in Columbus when he got drafted.
Yeah.
By the Blackhawks first overall, and wow, he's a hell of a player. That is that is a team that went through their struggles. You know, suddenly unfortunately the checkbook had to come out a little bit for them to really get anywhere.
Bufflin,
but they were a lot. They're a really fun team, and Patrick Kane, he's just so creative out there. It's so hard when you're locked into a structure, or you have to play with guys who are not quite, you know, or you have a coach that basically won't take the reins off. You know, you just get Patrick Kane out there and you just go, God, let the guy go.
Yeah, just go do things and stuff.
Yeah,
good American kid. Thumbs up. Random stat, Dion Phaneuf. This is from Stan Naratka on Twitter. Dion Phaneuf has taken 42 minor penalties this season, 5 more than anyone else in the NHL, and that's 42 more than Ryan O'Reilly has
taken
your captain. Whole season.
the other night who was the player that got injured really bad? I can't remember.
I can't remember, yeah.
Got boarded hard, yes. And they basically, it was like 4.2 seconds or something like that left on the period. And they send the refs send everybody back to the locker rooms. And you know, there's like, this was a former Tampa Bay Lightning player that got boarded by the Tampa Bay Lightning for the Leafs. So there's a couple of Tampa Bay Lightning players that stay out on the ice and are watching as the guys put on the stretcher. A lot of the Toronto Maple Leafs are out on the ice. Dion Phaneuf went back to the locker room and he came back later and was out there on the ice for his player after he went back to the locker room.
Right.
You know,
that's your captain,
dude. That's your captain.
Yeah.
42 minor penalties. Thanks, buddy.
Thoughts also.
Who is it? Justin Bourne was talking about it on Backhand Shelf recently about it's time to stop praising players for taking for penalties.
In fantasy, I have that linked. I don't know why I didn't put it in the doc, but he's talking about Ryan O'Reilly for the most part.
And it's fantasy a lot, like fantasy play. I don't do fantasy hockey, penalty minutes is a stat that you can win and it helps your fantasy team. Well, if you're taking minor penalties, how much is it really helping your team? You know, there's no real stat that tells you what a good penalty to take is and a bad penalty to take is. And there are good penalties to take. You know, if you got Patrick Kane skating in alone,
tackle him.
Yeah. You know, if you, as long as it's not a penalty shot, you know, do something.
Chop his legs off.
Yeah, exactly. Take the ding dang darn penalty.
Yeah, at least have a chance to kill that.
Yeah, but you know, he's right. If you are taking 42 penalties, minor penalties,
and that's five more than anybody else in the league.
Are you really helping your team? Yeah. So yeah, here's some phrase of the Lady Bing. Right. You know, the least manly sounding in manly. You know,
I never thought of it
sport.
That way, but yeah, I think you're right.
But, you know, hey, if it's good enough for Marty St. Louis, it's good enough for Ryan O'Reilly, you know.
And Joe Sakic.
Jeez, yeah. Yep. Oh, that's right. Joe Sakic won it, didn't
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
We don't forget about those things.
I did.
Last night before last, March 21st, the best thing ever happened in Montreal. Friends don't let friends bang on the glass. I don't care what anybody says. I haven't met anybody that's like, well, I paid enough money. I can bang on the glass if I want to. That's all you got for me. I just don't understand the whole, there was plenty of that going on during the Bruins game. I don't get it. I don't get it. Can you, have we talked about this? Can you explain this to me?
No, I can't.
Cause I know you're not a glass banger.
I'm not a glass banger. You call me a glass banger? You dirty glass banger. You don't you call me a glass banger.
We're going, let's drop the nuts. I just don't understand it, but this is, maybe it's a safety thing. Maybe they can actually tell people to stop doing it. Cause you could actually get hurt.
Well, yeah, somebody got,
it looked like this person might've gotten hurt.
Person banging on the glass funny. And somebody came and the play comes along and they got,
you have to watch the play. You can't cheer and bang on the glass at the same time. I don't think, I mean, you have to, unless the puck already went in, but
I was in Texas, for the Robertson Cup, which is the NAHL, tournament, for their championship, and the Amarillo, Bulls were playing, and they had some fans that came over, and these people are banging on the glass with a puck in each hand, and they're doing it bang 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 bang. It is so loud, and you're just like, oh, I hope this team loses so we can
stop the madness.
Yeah, listen, cowbells in people's ears. These, you know, I'm not going in my Snuggie to the games or anything, which if I could find an app Snuggie, I totally would.
But I think they're available.
I'm not going in my smoking jacket and, you know, reading Tolstoy next to the penalty box.
With your pipe?
I'd really like to do that also, kind of the antithesis of the Green Men.
Awesome.
But geez, people, come on. You know, this is a group outing. Can we not?
I don't care what anybody says. I don't think there's anything anybody could tell me that would be like, oh, okay, that makes sense. It just does not make sense.
It distracts the players.
No, it doesn't. They could care less about you banging on the glass. It just doesn't. I don't get it. I'll never get it. And watch your face if you're going to do it, I guess.
Post the video to that.
It's pretty fabulous. Yeah. Shout out to Chris Hoffine, who found it on Dauber Hockey first and said, Avs Podcast is going to love this. And I retweeted and just said, I love this.
Thing ever.
It was almost the best thing ever. I really liked it. One last thought, deep thoughts with Jay from the AHP. Shout out to my man, Matt Kitashima, a good friend of mine. I don't think he'll listen to this, but he's really into the psychological part of baseball, but it carries over. Mm-hmm. Either you're all in or you're in the way. So I think there's some Avs fans that need to figure out, are you in all the way? Is this something that you're on board with, because tearing apart Berra, doing all this and that, they've gotten 1 point out of the last six. Are y'all in or are you in the way? So you just kind of have to decide whether this is your team you're going to cheer for them either way. I mean, right now I'm ready to celebrate no matter how the season ends, just because of how good things have been and how unexpected it was. I get that you can every once in a while be honest and let the team know kind of what's going on. But for the most part, if you're wearing burgundy and blue, I'm going to cheer for you. And that's where I am as a fan, and I'd hope other people are as well.
Unless you're Brad May. But if, like, there's a culture around sports fandom right now, and a lot of it has to do with money. A lot of it has to do with marketing.
And Twitter.
A lot of it has to do with money. A lot of it has to do with marketing. If there's one team that did great and 29 that need to retool, that I think is a load of pucky. I think that the expectation is built that you're going to win. And if you don't win, then everything's garbage. Everything's a problem, blah, blah, blah. No, that's not how it works. There's one champion for a reason. And if you can't be happy with what you do have at when things are going well, then maybe it's a problem in your perspective. If people want to, you know, to be mad at Berra for a loss, it's one loss in 82 game season. If they want to be mad at Jaguar and kick him to the curb or whatnot, and I think that Jaguar is kind of the model right now for mixed emotions from the fans. He's not doing very well, but they still love him. What are you going
to
do?
Well, most of them do. I mean, a lot of people I've read enough to where, oh, he's washed up. It's time to look towards the future. It's just like, look, this Avalanche team, including myself, I was like, I wasn't even expecting them to make the playoffs, let alone have, I think they still have three or four more regulation wins than the defending Stanley Cup champions.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I was going to encourage people, just a perspective to look at through the rest of the season is just remember where this team was. Remember where they were predicted to be. Remember how that felt. And just appreciate the big picture and enjoy the rest of the ride.
I think the fans are going to appreciate it a lot more once I think that the fans that are upset about things, and, you know, some people are – there was this great thing from Stephen Colbert where he was talking about how he couldn't be – it was about Miss America and that she wasn't Caucasian, and so people freaked out. And he said, you know, I couldn't be happier for her. And Twitter, as usual, couldn't be happy.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's a megaphone. It's people in the moment, things like that, you know.
I'll get used to that someday, but right now I'm not used to it. So
you're just butthurt that people don't like your team as much as you do.
Oh. Thanks, Dr. Phil.
Wow. Where did that come from? A little bit of rudeness there, Mr.
All right,
Mr.
On that note.
No, but
I don't know if anybody could like the Avs as much as I do.
To be honest with you, I mean, I don't get too bent out of shape about it, only because there will always be that, and I just can't get as outraged as you see over a loss or over this or over that. I remember going to the last game of the first time the Avs didn't make the playoffs when Quinville was there, and going to the very last game of that season and still cheering on the team.
Absolutely.
They lost out by 3 points, but it was really by one because it was a meaningless game at the very end against Calgary, who had leapfrogged them. I can't get that as outrage.
Either way, whenever the season ends, we were there a couple years ago when they were playing for nothing.
Yeah.
I've been at the last games for the Avalanche, the last two or three years have been the final games of the season. This year, it's not that. They have four road games before the start of the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
which hasn't happened for a while. I don't care how crappy the season had been or how good the season had been. When the season's over, it's just depressing. It's just like, oh man, even if they stink, you're just, it's never been, man, I'm glad that's over. It's, oh man, hockey's over. So hockey's going to be over a little bit later than usual. And I'm excited about that.
Yeah. If you want to go beat up on somebody, go beat up on the Rockies.
Yeah, that's easy.
They're going to be horrible.
Might as well. Shout-outs, Avs Twitter psychic, loyal players, thank you. I appreciate the effort you put in. And
I've won four times now.
Every game you have. You stick with McKinnon.
Yeah.
Sticking with McKinnon.
Hit your bets, buddy.
Yeah. We've had a lot of fun with that, so I appreciate that.
Shout-out to Phil Park. I got to stop doing shout-outs to him because he seems to be getting them like the last five. You know,
he deserves them.
cool his heels a little bit. Phil. Anyways, went to the game with him. He's nuts. It's fun. And Kim, Avs Princess on Twitter, it's like, you know, I don't know, Avs PRNCS, I don't know, by a vowel or something.
It's
anyways,
a character thing, yeah.
Hi, Kim. Met her the other day. Had a great time. And that's shout-outs.
That's it. I did most of mine during the show, like I said before. Yeah. All right. Spiel time?
Spiel time.
Spiel time.
You can always find the Avs Hockey Podcast at www.avshockeypodcast.com. We're going to have a huge post on this one because, geez, there's so much that we talked about so much. There's a lot of videos to share with you, links to share with you, things we talked about. Go read those articles. Read Roy McGregor. Read the Dater stuff. Read all these things with all the stuff. Make comments on it because, you know, the comments are open there. We don't get a ton because that's how podcasts work and that's okay, but there's a lot of fun over there. There's also a lot of fun over at the Avs Hockey Podcast Facebook fan page. It's at facebook.com/Avs Hockey Podcast. We play Avs Twitter Psychic, hashtag Avs Twitter Psychic on Twitter, mostly through Jay's account. It's Jay is at Avs Podcast. I'm over at Tapeleg, TAPELEG on Twitter. Also, we have an email address that you can send any email to us at. That is avshockeypodcast@gmail.com. You can subscribe in iTunes because we're there. Also, if you can, please leave a comment. Finally get seeing the more recent ones. Jeez, I didn't realize that there were, you know, if you leave a comment, it helps other people find our podcast on iTunes. That's just how iTunes works. The more reviews they get, the more that they realize, hey, people actually listen to this thing. What else?
I think that's it. That was a really good spiel.
Thanks. Oh, you can call us at 845-704-RINK. It's 845-704-7465. Leave a comment, ask a question. We'll do something with it.
If you prefer the telephones.
Yeah.
Shout out to those of you that put in the hashtag AskAHP questions as well. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Anything else? We covered almost everything.
Oh, man.
Right there.
We went so...
This is a crazy really long edition, but there's a lot to talk about.
I'm sure I said things like 5 times over.
That's No, you didn't. I wouldn't let you do that. James, stop talking. Your mouth, it's moving.
James, why are you doing
that? All right. So I think we'll be back in your ear holes somewhat pretty close to playoff time.
Yeah, and probably we'll around the last game or...
Yeah, right around in there. We'll have a really good idea as far as what the future holds for this team, and mm-hmm. we get to talk about playoffs, I think. It's barring any craziness. But,
let's just say it right now that if you can't plan a parade, people, okay, we're not gonna get that crazy yet. But right now, Avalanche have 94 points. If they were to drop down to be out of a wild card slot right now, they'd have to lop about 15 points off. The last wild card slot is Phoenix with 79 points. Avs have 94.
Yes.
It's pretty much a lock that they're going to get the playoffs. But you know, I mean, it's not like Boston Red Sox cautious optimism kind of thing. But at the same time, you know, you got to earn your position first.
And they've done plenty of that so far. They still have some work to do.
So far,
yep. So far, yep. So far. Guarded optimism.
As it breaks down right now,
touching the iPad.
As it breaks down right now, St. Louis would be playing Phoenix in the playoffs. San Jose, who have 100 points, would be playing Minnesota in the playoffs. Anaheim and Los Angeles would be matchup, and Chicago and Colorado would be in the matchup. Let me make this perfectly clear, 100% right now. In the West, there are no Canadian teams in the playoff slot. Vancouver is the top-ranked Canadian team right now with 74 points. That's 5 points back of a wild card slot. And that's against a Phoenix Coyotes team that ain't bad right now.
They're playing well.
In the East, on the other hand, the Senators are almost certainly out of a playoff slot. They are currently 10 points behind Detroit, who have the last wild card slot. Toronto is in the wild card with 80 points, but they are certainly not guaranteed as... The Washington Capitals have 79 points, and the Columbus Blue Jackets have 78. Montreal has a playoff slot, being the third in the Atlantic right now. So this is crazy. The Canadian teams, 4 Canadian teams in the West, none of them in the playoffs right now.
That's sad.
That is crazy.
That's
and Dallas is creeping up on the on that wild card slot. That's going to be a grudge match between them and Phoenix to who has the last one. Minnesota's probably going
to
make it.
There's a lot of hockey left to be played.
Whole lot of hockey.
Let's just put it that way.
But, you know, that's a wacky lineup right there.
That's wacky wild stuff.
All right, I kind of derailed that for a moment.
That's all right. Standings update brought to you by Tape Leg Graylian. James, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, everybody. We'll be back in your ear holes in a couple weeks. We'll have a good picture of what's going to go on in the future, and we'll get going there. So until then, take care. Let's go, Avs. We'll see you next time on the Avs Hockey Podcast. See you.
Jimmy can't understand.
Are you recording just to, we going to do a run back real quick?
Yeah, we're going to run back. You ready to run back?
Is that a thing? Is that a term?
No.
It is now.
No, it's
not. Are we going to listen to it again?
Yes, but run back?
A playback.
Is that what it's called?
I don't know. You're the sound guy.
We're just going to go back and play it back a little, okay?
You should stop it and then we'll rewind it on the reel.
You don't rewind ones and zeros. You just go back. When do you?
You go back to different ones and zeros.
Yeah. There's no rewinding. It's like you calling it tape. It's not tape.
Be kind. Rewind.
There's no such thing as rewinding anymore. What do you? You want to get your 8-track out? maybe put some vinyl. We're gonna just
vinyl.
We're gonna etch an scratchy, Edison scratchy cylinder here in a moment with this and distribute the podcast. It's a vinyl cast.